Senate Committee on Information Management and Technology, Thursday, March 1st, 2001, 1 p.m., Hearing Room 357.
The Technology Committee to order, and I think I told you folks, we do have some conflicts with two committees running at the same time and with an overlap of committee members, so we're going to find people with us and sneaking out and coming back, and it isn't that they're bored at that particular moment or don't want to hear from you or anything, it's just the complication that does exist around this building sometimes. Good afternoon,
sir. Sorry about that, Chair.
Yes.
Speaking of complications around the building.
Yeah, there it is.
Where's my agenda? Okay. At this point, we're going to have an informational meeting, and it will be dealing with an overview of implementation of Senate Bill 622 from the 99 session. And we have invited testimony for this, and I will allow some time for others who might want to comment afterwards. I'm going to try, I'm watching my time a little bit. I've wanted to hold this to about an hour because we do have a public hearing work session on some other bills afterwards. So if you, I want you to be sure to get your message across, but be brief and quick if you possibly can, so we can kind of get through everyone and make the 1 hour deadline if we possibly can. At that,
Senator Farioli.
Yes.
Senator Farioli just walked in and said, would you be okay? He expressed some interest in this because he's getting some calls from his constituents.
I did ask the good senator if he wanted to. He certainly feel free to sit up here. And if anytime he wants to be involved, he participated as a member of the committee. We'd love to have you, Senator. Thank you. I need everyone I can get. In fact, I may call on some of you in the audience to come help me and serve on the committee this afternoon if I get short. Sherry Chang and Patrick McLarney and Link Shadley. Do you want to come up as a team?
Good afternoon, members of the committee. I'm Sherry Shun, Deputy Director of Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. With me are Patrick McLarney, who is the telecommunications manager, and Link Shadley, who is our telecommunications coordinator, responsible for central and eastern portion of the state.
I'm going to ask you a question if I could, Sherry. Can you folks hear in the back at all? I'm getting mixed signals. Would you speak up just a little bit then?
Yes,
these,
sir,
are not amplifier mics, really. They're more recording mics. So sometimes you get a little, you feel a little self-confident, think that you're broadcasting and you're really just going over there. So speak up if you would. Thank you, Sherry.
I'll do my best.
Okay.
Our job this afternoon is to walk you through the charge given to our department in implementing a portion of Senate Bill 622 and give you an update on where we are with the implementation. Given the instruction of the chair, I think we can handle this piece in less than 15 minutes,
okay,
if that meets with your approval. We do have a brief packet of information in front of you, which will help with laying the foundation for what we are about to talk about. So I would beg your indulgence in kind of walking through this packet with me so we can move through this fairly quickly. Let me start by saying that the focus of Senate Bill 622, as it relates to our agency, are four items. The first one is it requires carriers electing price regulation, and this is a voluntary election if the carrier chooses to do so, to fund telecommunications infrastructure and technology. And the bill does prioritize those investments and specifically say the state wants to fund connectivity to broadband for our communities, route diversity, which means having more than one way in and out for a community or having a backup system in telecommunications, and expediting advanced services going to communities in Oregon. It does form the Connecting Oregon Communities Advisory Board, which is a five-member citizen, volunteer citizen board appointed by the Commission, Economic and Community Development Commission, with consultation with the governor. And these members have the primary responsibility for looking at proposed projects for use of money toward telecom infrastructure and technology investment. And they make the recommendation to the commission. The commission has the final say in what's funded and what amount. Finally, there are four eligible carriers in the state, and they are, they were U.S. West, now Quest, GTE, now Verizon, Sprint, and Century Telephone. Let me go on to the next page. Everybody wants to know and be reminded exactly how much money was available for infrastructure and technology investment. The next page, page 3, shows a total of $120.4 million, which was calculated based on U.S. West's gross intrastate revenue in 1998. When the company opted in at the end of 1999, the legislation had required 20% of the previous year's gross intrastate revenue of the electing carrier. So that's how we ended up with 120.4 total. The legislation was also very specific in the allocation between two uses. One is education. The other is broader community-based infrastructure improvements. And it shows in columns, first of all, the year, from year 2000 on, the total amount of dollars in millions deposited into the aggregate of improvements. And as you can see, it's $36 million the first 2 years and $24 million the second set of years. And then it shows the dollar amount that goes toward economic development for the broader infrastructure improvement. That's the first column, 10.8, 10.8, 24.1, et cetera. And the second column, 575, 325, et cetera, are dollar amounts set aside in the legislation for our agency to administer this program. Then it shows a transfer to the state. The last column is dollar amounts dedicated for K through 12 technology enhancement. And later on, you will hear Tom Cook talk about how they use that 25.3 times 2, the $50.6 million. And my job is to talk to you about the $68.2 million, which is the responsibility of our department. If there are no questions, I'm ready to go on and
At this point? Okay.
Now, if we go on to page 4, telecommunications infrastructure account is the title for the non-school, non-K through 12 money. It includes $68.2 million for infrastructure, and this is outside of the administration money. And the administration money did include funding for a statewide needs assessment, which became the basis for proposed projects from regions of the state. We wanted to show you that there is another account, the Connecting Oregon Communities Fund, which received $50.6 million, and $50 million went to K through 12. The $0.6 million went to a public access account. There were, I think, 7 or 8 named uses for funds in that account, beginning with higher education system and go down the list, community college and libraries, Oregon Public Broadcasting, et cetera. And because there had not been sufficient funding to go further down the list in the named beneficiary, the 0.6 was only sufficient to meet a portion of the first named use, which is the Oregon higher education system. And again, the technology account is K through 12, and I know Tom Cook will provide a lot more information. So if I may, I'd like to go on to page 5, which says, we see our job is to facilitate the deployment of telecommunications infrastructure to achieve two things. One, build economic opportunities, and two, build quality communities across Oregon. Page 6 lists the activities we have been engaging in the last year. We have been helping communities and business groups to assess their telecommunication service needs, and this was done largely as part of the statewide needs assessment, which was funded as part of the administration cost of the program. We have been helping...
Jerry, a quick question. Someplace back in here, will you elaborate on that? Is there something, were you elaborating on that particular point?
The needs...
I guess I was going to ask you, give me an example, for example, of that first one. Helping community and business groups assess their telecommunication service needs. What specifically have you been doing in that area?
I should have Link, who has been working in the trenches, to offer an example of working with communities and business groups.
I'm just trying to get a picture of the state and see what you...
There were two parts to that, and both were done statewide. The first part was getting partners who had some technical assistance funding from the department to organize community groups in every county. Some of them did two or three counties at a time, but they held meetings within the county with some of the telecommunications, I call them advocates or evangelists, also community leaders, local elected officials, and develop a prioritized list of their needs. Then they brought that up to an upper level for a regional needs. Those are submitted to us, and those are part of the plans. That's what we measure the projects against that are submitted to us for approval. And the second part of that was a household telephone survey that was done statewide that gave us a good insight into number of computers, how many people use them, how many have dial-up, how many have access to broadband, where are their problems, where are their local voice problems. So we have that data to use, and a number of the communities have used that as they develop their own plan, saying, here's where the red flag is.
Okay, that gives me some idea of what you're doing. Okay, thank you.
Okay. And in addition, we have been identifying and coordinating resources in order to help prioritize and meet community needs. This Link has already talked about it in his example, but basically we try to figure out who ought to come to the table to help figure out what are the needs, what's available, and how to fill the gap. And that, and we take it upon ourselves to make sure the right people show up. We also have been reviewing proposals for use of the telecommunications infrastructure account money. I mentioned the $68.2 million available, and it's our responsibility to kind of direct the use. So part of the staff's responsibility is to review these proposals, but at the same time, we have been helping local communities with development of proposals, just to make sure that they have the proper resources and tools to provide us with needed information. We have been helping communities, partners, and staff to address telecommunications issues. Most recently, the example may be the Harney County chair has been concerned about multiple T1 lines in his county courthouse employed by state services, and was curious about if there are any redundancy, if there are opportunities for the county to piggyback onto excess bandwidth of someone else's T1, someone else's connection. And Link has been heavily involved in kind of helping to figure things out and answer that question.
Yes, Senator Atkinson.
Excuse me, T1 lines in Burns?
Yes, there are numerous T1 lines in Harney County Courthouse, and Burns actually has a stop of a on the major fiber optic line, which is part of the state system because of the archives building and because of the extensive backup system.
Senator Timms. That's amazing.
Timms has left his mark on this state.
Okay. That just stuck out, and I think I won't get on my soapbox. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Thank you.
And finally, we have been...
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I had resolved to sit silently here and listen. However, I
didn't expect that to happen.
I must defend my colleague, Senator Timms, who simply would say to you today, if you were here, that that Burns is the most earthquake-proof place in Oregon. And that's why the archives and the T111 lines are located there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
There's some talk of moving the Capitol over there.
Finally, we have been maintaining a clearinghouse of information for telecommunications-related economic development programs as we continue to engage in helping to assess needs, identify options and solutions. We begin to accumulate information and have been actively using the agency's website, the telecom section, to post that information and encourage sharing of this sort of information. Page 7 shows the milestones that we think you may be interested in understanding the progression of our program implementation. As you can see, from September 1999, when Senate Bill 622 was signed into law, we have been kept fairly busy. Quest opted in December of 1999, and then in the following 12 months, the staff did the work needed in order for decisions to be made on proposed projects, and that included engaging in the statewide needs assessment, as Linka had described, getting to the needs assessment product, which was shared with the Joint Legislative Information Management and Technology Committee, I believe three times in the last calendar year, and finally leading to a round of proposals submitted to us end of August 2000, and the Connecting Oregon Communities Advisory Board acted on those proposals in September of 2000. The Commission acted on them in October of 2000. Remember, we have two decision bodies and a two-step process. And the second round of proposals were submitted end of 2000 in December, and the Advisory Board and the Commission met in February. Just this past month to take actions on.
Sure, a question. You're getting proposals and you have so much money. How is what's the match so far? Are you able to fund most of the proposals, or are you finding proposals far exceed the availability of funds?
Well, remember, we start out with $68.2 million. So the first round of proposals, when the projects were approved, they were approved based on rough cost estimates. And once the projects were approved, Quest engineers have sharpened their pencil to come up with better, more reliable cost estimates. And the most recent cost estimate we have for the first round of projects, which were approved in October, is $49 million. So we start out with 68.2, we take out the 49, we have about $19 million left in the pot if we fund all round one projects. And then we have a second round of projects on the docket, and they total up to $24 million.
And you have 19.
Well, we have 19, so we don't have enough to fund everything.
It gives me some idea of the way the requests are coming. Senator Nelson, you were ready to ask something.
I'm just saying, Chair, the comments we've been getting indicate there's been some problems at the and this funding or these priority levels, that the first round was accepted and then evidently second round was approved and then everything was sort of thrown out and then brought back in. And I think the committee might like to know what that process is. Are we, what has the commission decided or the board has decided, or where are we in this whole process?
Senator Nelson, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, I'd be happy to speak briefly to where we are in the process. And I think it's interesting that Senator Nelson refers to the quandary we're in now and all the additional work charged to the staff and advisory board as a problem. We every day think of the origin of the problem.
I mean, the thing is, we're getting phone calls from people and saying, what's going on out here? The board has led us one direction, or the commission has led us one direction.
Right.
Now all of a sudden, we're going another direction. The whole project is losing, there's been a loss of confidence by and large, and that's one of the reasons why Senator Farioli is here, because I know he's getting telephone calls too. And
yes.
So we have some concern about, you know, where 622 is going. We have a lot of investment in this, and we want to make sure that the commission is going in the right direction and the department's going in the right direction. So that's where I'm coming.
The decision the commission has made is...
Wait, when you say the commission, let's be sure, let's use the right... You're talking about the
Economic and Community.
I'm sorry, what?
Economic and Community Development Commission.
Okay, not the Economic.
Not the Connecting Oregon Communities Advisory Board.
Okay.
Very quickly, we have two bodies involved in looking at projects. The advisory board's job is to look at the more in-depth technical aspects of proposals and sort of do the hard work. and the commission does the second round of check and look at the decisions and the recommendations of the advisory board in light of broader policy context, because they have been involved in economic and community development for years and years. So that's basically the sequence. The advisory board and the commission both had approved one round of projects in October. That round of projects will add up to $49 million based on our most recent cost estimate. The advisory board met in early February and acted on a second round of projects, which totaled $24 million. They took their action without benefit of the updated cost estimate of the first round of projects. So when the commission met later, after the advisory board had acted on the second round of projects, the commission's direction is, gee, since we don't have enough money to fund everything, we need to make sure we spend money on what's important. And the commission's leaning, they did not take formal action because they wanted to charge the advisory board and the staff to engage in active conversations with parties of interest and take the time to work through if there are win-win solutions, rather than, you know, $5 million worth of projects will not be funded based on our current administrative rules. So they basically said, in order not to hold off on implementation of important things that we all agree absolutely have to be done, let's go ahead with funding for five rings. And these are five connected rings in the state, which will provide the route diversity that everyone says is needed for business recruitment, for homes and everybody else not to go down when a farmer cuts a fiber. And those five rings add up to $44 million, well within the monies we have. And if the concern is, are we going to negate the commitment to those projects that have been funded in round one? If you take the $44 million for the rings, out of the $68 million total in the pot, there's 24 left. Those projects in round one, on top of the rings, total up $13 million. So just by doing the simple math, we know those $13 million could all be funded out of the 24 after we build these five rings. The commission's action, I think it's a little confusing, because they want to do the right thing by, one, giving the advisory board the opportunity to work with local partners and kind of come up with something that is a consulted recommendation. Secondly, they don't want to hold every decision at bay until everything is all worked out. So they said, go ahead and do the five rings. We know we have money. We know we can continue with a commitment with round one. But at the same time, we want you, the advisory board and the staff, to work hard with local partners and figure out if there is a smarter way to use the rest of the money, but only if everyone agrees.
You know, I'm watching the time, and I want to be sure that we get a chance for everyone to present today. And I'm sure in some of those presentations, we're going to hear some of those concerns from open. So I will try to allow time and maybe have to get some of you back up here again to respond to some more questions. So why don't I let you move forward and finish yours, and then we'll move to the next and try to, because I know we have a lot of questions. Is that all right, Senator Nelson? Okay.
Well, page 9 actually speaks to a portion of what we've just been talking about. What good is this money going to do if we fund these projects? Page 9 lists the first round of seven projects that were approved in October 2000. They're going to build the self-healing rings across the state, which will provide route diversity to most part of eastern, central, northwest, and southern Oregon. And they are going to bring broadband access to 40 communities, and they will speed the availability of digital subscriber lines. And I should say that Senator Atkinson was saying to me some concerns that he's heard from local cable service providers on if 622 implementation is kind of unfairly interfering with the cable deployment of, because as you know, cable modem is also a form of broadband access that can go to the homes and offices directly, similar to digital subscriber line. And I would say the short answer is the advisory board is very aware of that concern. We've had active conversations with Mike Dewey, and through him with his membership, our solution is proposals are posted on our website as soon as we get them, so that Mike can make that available to his members for review and comments. And the advisory board, if there is evidence of broadband deployment in certain communities intended in the near future, then they are committed not to funding digital subscriber line because it is unnecessary. Page 10 shows five blobs or rings, and those shaded blob areas basically show the ring configuration, which allows for the route diversity and outlined in a very quick way where those self-healing rings are in the state. And you will see by looking at that map, there are a few areas left out in central sort of mid-Columbia area. It is primarily Sprint service territory in southwest coast. The south coast is it's Verizon territory. In the central coast, where there is a gap there, that's primarily Sprint service territory. And I should say that this is not to point out that other people are other service providers are not playing game, playing with us at the same table. In fact, some of them have been very collaborating very well in making sure that their investment dovetail with these investments and we leverage the most out of it. And you have Bill Wyman sitting in the back, who is with Century Telephone, and he has been a wonderful player in this process. A final point on page 11 are the things that we're doing. In addition to getting contracts out for approved projects, working through the money questions that Senator Nelson had just raised, we see ourselves very much as continuing to serve as the convener, facilitator, and resource, not only for future projects, that if there is any money left in this account, but also for future problems and solutions in various communities, because we have built some knowledge and some resources, and we think that should continue to be put to use to benefit communities and businesses. And that concludes our presentation.
Do either of you have anything you'd like to comment on?
Make one very brief
comment.
Would
you identify yourself?
Yes. Link Shadley, Oregon Economic and Community Development. One of the powerful things that SB 622 has done is jump-started the community enthusiasm. There were some community planning groups in the state, and there were some areas where there were not. And as this project became a reality, we kind of enthused those people, gave them some resources to work with, and now they're continuing on and helping themselves. And I think that's probably the most powerful and lasting legacy of this whole project. Really good to see that happen.
Mr. Chair, I just have one question. Senator Harper wanted me to ask you where the Lakeview project was in all this process. He has some concerns about that.
Senator Nelson and Mr. Chair, the Lakeview project is part of the Southern Ring. And the ring is what the commission had approved at their February 22nd meeting. And so it is part of the contract, as I understand, to proceed as Pat to...
Actually, that portion, sir, this is Pat McLarney for the Economic Development Department. That portion of the project is not an essential piece of the ring. It would be a connection into the ring. And as our interpretation of what the commission said was in their February 22nd meeting was, do the ring. So the ring gets done, but the lawyers tell us that connections into that ring are not the ring.
Where is that in the process and that connect, just so I can indicate to Senator Harper where it,
Senator Nelson and Mr. Chair, I think what we ought to do, given that there are a number of projects where people are getting confused and the staff had not made the rounds to go out into communities and have face-to-face conversation with folks, we will offer to schedule individual briefings very quickly with the legislators who may have an interest because of the, you know, how their district may be involved. And I think rather than taking up the committee's time, we'll just take that on the
Senator Perioli.
Actually, there's two bodies, one that helps administer the
in various communities, because we have built some knowledge and some resources, and we think that should continue to be put to use to benefit communities and businesses. And that concludes our presentation.
Do either of you have anything you'd like to comment on?
Make one very brief
comment.
Would
you identify yourself?
Yes. Link Shadley, Oregon Economic and Community Development. One of the powerful things that SB 622 has done is jump-started the community enthusiasm. There were some community planning groups in the state, and there were some areas where there were not. And as this project became a reality, we kind of enthused those people, gave them some resources to work with, and now they're continuing on and helping themselves. And I think that's probably the most powerful and lasting legacy of this whole project. Really good to see that happen.
Mr. Chair, I just have one question Senator Harper wanted me to ask you where the Lakeview project was in all this process. He has some concerns about that.
Senator Nelson and Mr. Chair, the Lakeview project is part of the Southern Ring, and the ring is what the commission had approved at their February 22nd meeting. And so it is part of the contract, as I understand, to proceed as Pat to...
Actually, that portion, sir, this is Pat McLarney for the Economic Development Department. That portion of the project is not an essential piece of the ring. It would be a connection into the ring. And as our interpretation of what the commission said was in their February 22nd meeting was, do the ring. So the ring gets done, but the lawyers tell us that connections into that ring are not the ring.
Where is that in the process and that connect? Just so I can indicate to Senator Harper where.
Senator Nelson and Mr. Chair, I think what we ought to do, given that there are a number of projects where people are getting confused and the staff had not made the rounds to go out into communities and have face-to-face conversation with folks, we were offered to schedule individual briefings very quickly with the legislators who may have an interest because of the, you know, how their district may be involved. And I think rather than taking up the committee's time, we'll just take that on the
Senator
response.
Perioli.
Actually, there's two bodies, one that helps administer the I guess the thing that occurs to me is that things that happen in clearly to me is bait and switch. Reference. Magical rings, people want to see them, but in point of fact, they feel like people are being beat back and forth between two different entities that don't communicate very well. And I think, you know, you talked about the two bodies. Folks in my district are wanting me to find out where they want them dumped. You know, so the bottom line is that there has been a lack of communication. I don't know that even if we explained very well to people that this ring process is reprioritized in front of some local services, whether they would accept that as being reasonable when so many expectations and so much of the economic development plans and of the future of these communities is at stake. So I guess, you know, I understand what you're trying to explain here, and what may make sense here in Salem is not something I can sell out in rural communities. You know, wait your turn, that you've been reprioritized, this makes more sense. The rings are the priority because they offer the self-healing connectivity that will make the system more efficient eventually. We've got experts are telling us we need to reprioritize. That won't get you a half-full cup of coffee in rural Oregon. So I'm very concerned that what's really at stake here is the credibility of the product of 1149.
622.
Excuse me, 622. Thank you.
You're on.
I just went to energy deregulation right. From.
Let's try to keep them separate in this particular meeting.
I'm you know, somewhere in an alternate universe, they're on a collision course. I know it. You know it. thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I just say something?
Yes.
There has been no reprioritization, just
I'm
so to be clear.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
There has been no reprioritization by the commission. The commission is the official body with the decisions. They act on the recommendations of the advisory board. They have chosen in their most recent decision not to act on the advisory board's recommendation because they feel a lot more conversations need to take place between the local partners and the advisory board and the staff in order to seek win-win solutions. I don't believe anyone intend to go back on their words. However, what everyone is doing to go through the extra rounds is to find solutions that will allow more communities to get more out of the limited resources. And if I may just say one thing, I know the intent is to have all of these worked out at the next commission meeting, which is April. Mm-hmm. So people are working very, very hard, moving toward a quick resolution, you know, driving around the state, talking with folks they need to talk to, and that will continue to occur over the next month or so. So we're not just sort of sitting on things, dragging our feet, and not ignoring the conversations we need to have. But I do understand what you've shared with us, and I think one unfortunate thing is information came at us fairly late, given the commission meeting. And there have been a lot of work done on the part of the advisory board, even though they were all public meetings, but there had not been enough time for their thinking through among themselves to be translated, interpreted, and fully consulted with the partners.
Well, I guess from what I'm hearing in different discussions, I guess there's a real concern about 622 being in jeopardy. Is that what I'm hearing?
Mr. Chairman, yes. I think that everyone who has a stake in the outcomes has received voluminous communication via fax, mail, and phone calls from constituents who are being activated by their community organizations, including chambers of commerce and business assistance leagues and so forth throughout the state. And there's a very real sense that projects that are reprioritized may, in fact, be reprioritized to oblivion, taken off the table, or somehow getting lost in the second and third rounds. And I'm hearing very clearly that there are funds available to do the project and no lack of commitment. I'm hearing that in this room. I am not hearing that back from constituents who are getting the reassurances that they need immediately to stop the flow of information out of my fax machine, which I really would appreciate. And I don't know if the Senator Nelson, I suspect, has had the same tidal wave of pointed communication from
that. That is correct.
So at this point, we're assured that there will be no reprioritization. Is that right?
I cannot speak on behalf of the advisory board nor the commission. And I think at the commission's April meeting is when the final decision will be made. However, I heard very clearly from the commission, they feel strongly not to reprioritize. But that is, frankly, it depends on who your constituents are and whether they have a proposal in the first or the second round. I think the advisory board and the commission both are trying to do the best thing, which is to figure out how to buy the most, given the intent of the legislation, out of the money available, and also do the right thing by our administrative rule processes and by what the legislation requires us to do, which is why they have committed to taking some extra time to talk to everybody. One example, Dan Stark, who's sitting in the audience, told me this morning that a proposal they made in the first round, which was approved for a point of presence in LeGrand, actually is done. It's an approved project. It had a price tag of $500,000, but around the time that the project was being approved, Verizon and Quest had gone ahead and made the investment. So that's a saving. And here is just one example of reasons why we need to go back and do another round of checking on, is this still needed, and how much money are we talking about? We have better cost estimates from the engineers from Quest, but we need to confer with the community groups in order to get that done. And I know Pat was in Central Oregon yesterday meeting with folks, and I give you my word in the advisory board and the staff are committed to getting the word out face-to-face, listening to folks concerned, and get accurate information out.
Okay.
And at this point, I think the best we can do is come back with an update.
Okay, well, if you would keep us apprised, we'd appreciate it. I guess what the big concern, you say April, we've got the opportunity for about 4 to 6 weeks of the rumor mill even compounding and getting worse. So I guess that really stresses the importance of you getting out and getting some...
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
If you wouldn't mind, we are planning...
Could you identify yourself once again?
Oh, yes, Pat McLarney with the Oregon Economic Community Development Department. We are having the next board meeting in Bend on Thursday, April the 8th, next week at 9:30 in the morning till around 11:30.
April the 8th or March 8th?
Excuse me, March 8th, next Thursday. Yeah. The exact location we don't know yet because we haven't been able to haul that down. The purpose of that meeting with the board members is for them to get a chance to see exactly what was said by the commission on February 22nd, and then to set up a series of meetings around the state with the communities and the people who have put their applications in, so that we can talk with them, hear from them, work with them to find a variety of solutions that we can take back and recommend to the commission, which they've asked us to do, so that then the commission on April 19th can say the process has taken place, we've heard, we've got new numbers, we've got recommendations, we've got volunteerism, we've got updated numbers.
Now, is that word widely circulated about the March meeting?
Oh, it will be, sir. We have an email.
It will be. You say it has not been.
No,
yet.
Sir, because we don't have the location down, so we didn't want to tell 800-plus people
I guess,
where to go because we don't know where to go.
I hope that you'd get that word out rapidly. It would save some fax machines. Yes, and I'm going to try to move on so I get the others on.
Just one quick comment. Some of the input that I'm getting is the fact that we've been on this process for 2 years or 2.5 years, however long it's been, and when are we going to get to the point where something's going to get done? We keep pushing things back, and the education part of it is basically up and running, and their problem is the other way, is they've got all these processes going in, and they just need more help to get everything all hooked up, and so there's... The education part's up here, and the economic development part is down here. And our communities are saying, we want some action.
Okay, I'm going to stand by, and we may have you back up if I can. Okay, at this point, Jenny Lang, would you please come forward? And while she's coming, I do want to just bring to the attention of the committee that Pamela Johansson is our new committee clerk, and we appreciate her joining us. Andrew has started working with...
Continuing with Health and Human Services.
We had just borrowed him. And we also want to acknowledge the work of Anita Mullins, who really does a lot of the behind-the-scenes work for us and doesn't always get the appreciation. We want to acknowledge her work. Okay? Ginny, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jenny Lang. I represent Quest. I was going to spend just a little time on the regulatory portion of Senate Bill 622, and then I would be happy to answer any questions that you have about any of the other parts of the bill as well. And I'll do this quickly. The regulatory components of Senate Bill 622 did a number of things. One, it eliminated rate of return regulation for the electing telephone company. It put in place price caps for non-basic services, and basic services, primarily dial tone, prices continue to be set by the Public Utility Commission. U.S. West, now Quest, elected to come under Senate Bill 622 on December 30th of 1999, so we have just about 1 year's worth of experience. And we've been very happy with the relationship that we're developing on the new rules of the game with both the commissioners and with the staff. It's been a very good process for us. Another element of the regulatory action was that service quality levels were set in place for an electing company, which included predetermined fines that could be applied to companies if they failed to perform. We're in the situation now where we have the 1 year's worth of experience. We have failed in a couple of the categories. The commission is talking about the potential for using the fines to improve quality of service in areas where we have been deficient. So that process is underway, and the discussion is going on with the commission. And the final large portion of the regulatory element was the prohibited acts section, which really applies to our business-to-business relationships with competitors, and it established a sort of a fast-track process if there were complaints. As far as the impact on the company of the regulatory elements, probably the primary one for us is that it eliminated rate cases in the future. Now, we are still in the process of completing the last rate case that we were had underway with the commission, and we're in the rate design phase of that. And so hopefully within the next 6 to 12 months, we will complete that and have then the rates in place that are actually subject to the price caps part of Senate Bill 622. It has reduced our workload in some respects because we don't file nearly as many tariffs that have to go through the exacting processes with the commission that we used to. We still file with the commission our price lists and make sure that they know what we're offering, but we don't go through the protracted procedures that we used to. And there are some reductions in the financial reporting requirements that we have on certain kinds of transactions and depreciation schedules and so on. So from our standpoint, the regulatory process has been a very pleasant one, actually. We've been very pleased with the progress that we've made with the commission and the staff. The other elements of the bill have also been an exciting adventure. Working with the Department of Education and certainly Tom Cook in the open group on the K-12 portion has been really a very exciting and worthwhile piece of work. It was a huge project, and the fact that spending $50 million was very clearly delineated in the legislation and had very tight time frames on it was made for a challenge for both the department and for the company, as well as other companies around the state, because much of that money was spent throughout the state, irrespective of the territorial lines of the company. So that has gone very well. And we have, I think, made real progress with many of the community partners that we've worked with on the rural infrastructure part. we have some of the same frustrations that you and the community people and certainly the department has about the timeframe that we would like to be out there, you know, turning shovels in the dirt and getting work done. But I have every expectation that within the next few weeks or certainly months that that's going to happen, and we'll start seeing the results soon.
Thank you, Jenny. Any questions for Jenny?
Just going to ask on that, on the contracts, is there any particular thing that's holding up those contracts and that this committee could help with?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, if you weren't a lawyer, I'd probably tell you that it was the lawyers, but...
So those damn lawyers? I know what to do with those.
I think we're real close. I think we just need to get closure on two or three more things and get some signatures on lines, and we'll be in business.
We'll keep Senator Nelson out of it, and it should be expedited rapidly.
I think it'll be well. Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Jenny.
Thank you.
Tom Cook.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, yes, Senator Cariello.
Ms. Lang, the crossed or imperfect communications on this issue is generating negative publicity. What's the effect of that on this project, on implementation of 620?
I'm sorry, Senator, would you repeat your question?
The mixed or crossed or imperfect communication to communities on the exact status of implementation of Senate Bill 622 is creating negative publicity. And that's evidenced by the faxes and phone calls. And it tells me two things. It tells me of the value of the program. It's valued very highly by rural communities. But it's generating negative publicity. The fact that there's uncertainty, and now possibly people are suspicious of the outcomes. Is that negative publicity affecting the program or policy, or are you hearing that negative publicity in your offices?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Farioli, we're certainly getting the same kinds of communications, probably not in the same ways that you are, but as my team is out on the stump and talking with community leaders and others, they're certainly hearing the frustration that, you know, we've been at this for over a year, and why hasn't something happened? We've gone through all the processes you told us that we needed to do, and now we'd like to see some results. So certainly it's been a difficult circumstance, and we need to get our ducks in line and get the contract signed and start talking with the community people immediately about what we're going to do and when we're going to do it and how it's going to happen. And I think only some solid results in communities is going to satisfy people that we're back on track.
Sounds like, based on what Senator Farioli has said, people want to see action and not words right now.
Mr. Chairman, I think the intention is good. The legislation's effective. The process is now an impediment to the implementation. And that causes people in every community to be angry and suspicious that state agencies prevent the progress that they're assigned to promote. And that's the negative publicity that I keep hearing. I'm not sure it's earned. I'm sure that there are circumstances that make...
Perception and reality get...
It won't matter. You know, when folks hold that meeting on March 8th, I think it's possible the smell of hot tar may be the most prevalent thing in the room. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Okay. Tom Cook.
Thank you. My name is Tom Cook.
Identify yourself.
I'm the director of the Oregon Public Education Network. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, with me is David Wright from the Department of Education. And I'm going to ask David to first report on implementation processes and results, and then I will follow up with some comments of my own. We originally thought that this would take about an hour and a half to tell you all of our success stories, but we'll try to keep it down to 15 minutes.
I'm sure you will.
My name is David Reich, Director of Technology, Department of Education. As you know, Senate Bill 622 directs the department to implement the bill. When the bill passed, Superintendent Stan Bunn asked Tom Cook to chair the committee to put it in place. The department joined with Tom at that point in a very successful relationship, and it's always a pleasure to report on a success to the committee. We hired, the department hired a quality assurance contractor to help us guide us on our way. We developed a web application, take applications over the internet for all of our schools and districts so that we could implement the bill. To report on specific sections of the bill then, and I'll be following the handout that was provided to you, that is called an update on Senate Bill 622 implementation. This is the more
David,
of the cut and dried.
I assume you're going to just highlight this because we'll have this.
Yes.
We can read.
Yes, just
give us a quick summary.
I'll highlight the cut and dried part here, and then Tom can get to the more dramatic and thrilling aspects of the implementation. Section 1.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I hate to have to miss the dramatic and thrilling aspects of Tom Cowan's presentation, but I'm called to another committee. But I appreciate your courtesy in allowing me to sit.
I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you, sir.
Go right ahead.
Section 1 provided funds to put land in every school facility in the state of Oregon. That has been accomplished, serving an additional 91 schools. Section 2 was funding that went to Tom Cook to operate the Open Project, and you'll have to ask him what he did with that. Section 3 helped reimburse the cost of putting a T1 line speed into a T1 speed line into every eligible school facility in Oregon, either upgrading what they had or continuing to reimburse what was already there.
What's an eligible school district?
An eligible school. It was one that has to meet the definition of a school established by the department. It's public schools,
okay,
for the
so
most
every
part,
school,
as you would.
Yeah.
Okay. So several 56K lines were upgraded to T1, and I'm happy to report at this point in time that all schools have received that line, with some minor exceptions and some small difficulties that Tom will discuss. Sections 4, 5, and 6 are the implementation of the distance education network. Section 4 is the one that actually pays for the purchase of the hardware, the VTEL units that are going into all the high schools. 5 and 6 are funding mechanisms to pay for the connection from the high school to the LAN, or rather to the backbone, to DAS, to provide the video services. Section 7 is the ADMW portion of Senate Bill 622. The first year, calendar year 2000, $11.9 million was budgeted. $11.9 million has been dispersed. On the next page, there are a couple of highlights I'd like to highlight, and then I'll turn it over to Tom. To date, just to give you a status of where we are on the implementation, 85 video conferences nodes are installed. 245 schools and ESDs have initiated an application with us, so that means that there are approximately only 40 that have not yet applied, and we will go out and get around to them. We're implementing about 15 to 20 a month, and that's why we're not too worried about the last 40. We have plenty to do between now and the end of the year. With that, I will turn it over to Tom Cook to talk about some of the other experiences we've had.
Thank you, David.
Implementing the bill.
Thank you, David. And again, for the record, Tom Cook, Director of Oregon Public Education Network. David referred to the one segment that was allocated to OPEN as a part of the bill, and those funds were to assist K-12 in the state in in funding internet access. In the K-12 network, we have an estimated 120,000 workstations or computers across the state, and the bandwidth requirements to support this is growing immensely. We're adding 3 to 6 megabits of capacity per month to support the type of applications that are beginning to be used in the classrooms, and this money was allocated to continue to pay for that. We're estimating that in our next fiscal year, the internet access bill will be somewhere in the excess of $800,000 for K-12 alone, and it will continue to grow. So those funds that were allocated here were to take care of that. In my remarks, the handout that I have provided to you, we have in fact accomplished a tremendous amount in the last 14 months. And as I'm looking back now, I'm thinking that it was probably in our own best interest that we didn't have money allocated to do a lot of studying and implementation. We just went forward and did it. And we've run into some challenges because of that, but it may have been in our own best interest. And I've listed these as challenges and accomplishments. First of all, one of the challenges is that not all of the areas of Oregon have yet been connected. We still do have some delays. We still do have some areas that have extended relief dates on those. But I must say that with the working partnership that we have with the carriers in the state, that they are doing everything possible to make this happen. And we're working with the community, working those schools, with the carriers to improve that. With over 600 new orders of T1s, well, it's one of the accomplishments in this time frame. Many of the providers were able to cost justify or accelerate their upgrades in some of those regions that might have ended up being on the other side of 622.